Okay, what I want to do this evening is, in a sense, just, I think it's just amplify what God has already spoken to us through the worship and also through the words of the prophets who came up, because I've been praying about what we might look at this evening. And what I want to look at is a picture in the Old Testament, which I believe is a picture for us as we go into 2011. And it helps me, so I'm just praying that it is going to help you as well. And before we go into this picture, because we're going to read it in the Bible, if you've got a Bible, you can be flicking through to Joshua, because I'm going to be looking at Joshua 3. But you may need to know what the ark is, and we'll probably have a picture. Here we are. There's an awful lot in the Old Testament about the ark. Sometimes it's called the Ark of the Testimony. And the ark was simply a wooden box. You can see that in the picture. It had... It was a simple wooden box. It wasn't greatly carved or ornate, actually. It had cherubim figures on it. The really important thing was that inside this wooden box was the law of God. The really, really important thing was that on the four corners of this wooden box, there were four rings, and through those rings, there were poles so that it could be carried. And the ark of God, which God told Moses to build and to cover in gold and to put at the center of the place where they worshipped, the ark was like a symbol or a picture to the people of God of God's presence with them. It was just a picture of God's presence. So it no longer exists. I know we've got films about raiders of, I don't know if it's the ark they're still looking for, but I can tell you something, people. God's presence has not been lost. Some people may have lost it, but God's presence is not lost. And God is here tonight, and God is with us. And so you need to know that the ark is the symbol of God's presence. Now, we're going to read this story, and it's in Joshua 3. And the story is this. The people of Israel have been wandering through the desert for 40 years. And they've got to the borders of the promised land. You've been talking about what you hope for in and pray for in 2011. That's like the place where we're going, the place of our dreams, the place we hope for. So here's a picture of some people. They're the people of God. They've got to the borders of the promised land. It's a place they've been looking for 40 years. So they're really footsore and weary, because sometimes we have to wait for a long time. And they've got there, and they're about to enter, but there's one big obstacle. And the big obstacle is the River Jordan. And the River Jordan is in full flood, and they can't cross. So there they all are, and they've got to get across. And Joshua is the leader. And Joshua is on his own, as it were. He's had Moses with him for 40 years when he's been learning his trade, as it were. But now Moses has died and Joshua's on his own. Well, he's not quite on his own, because Moses has taught Joshua the most important lesson he could ever help him with, which is spend time talking to God in the presence of God and worshiping, and you will discover what you have to do. So we'll pick up the story here in chapter 3, verse 5, because you need to know how they're going to get across. Joshua told the people, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you." And Joshua said to the priests, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people." So they took it up and went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river." Joshua said to the Israelites, "Come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. You can see I've practiced. That was the enemy. See, says Joshua, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carried the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and will stand up in a heap. Likely story. That was my addition. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest, yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowing down to the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. What a picture. I wonder who in that picture you identify with. You don't have to put your hands up or tell me or tell anybody else. But I just want you to think, who did you identify with as we read that story? Because it's a picture of breakthrough. The people got through to the promised land. It's a picture of destiny achieved. It's a picture of salvation. It's a picture of prayers answered. And how it happened was through the priests being obedient to the word of God, carrying the Ark of God, the symbol of God's presence, into the water and standing on the water and seeing it become dry ground. And here we've got a picture of all the people of God, the people of Israel, were all standing on the one side watching the priests, because the word had gone out to the priests, carry the Ark of the Covenant into the water, and the water will dry up and the people will be able to cross over. How many of you, no, don't put your hands up, would like to have been the people watching? Because I would have liked to be the people watching. Let's see what happens here. Let's see what happens when the priests pick up that heavy box and try and stand in water. Or would you like to have been the priests? You heard the word and you thought, yep, I will be picking up Ark of God and marching into the water, and the waters are going to stand up in a heap. I hope. But the story is, of course, that that's exactly what happened. Who would you like to be? Well, the Old Testament is usually a story or a picture of what we in the New Testament can live out. So the natural story in the Old Testament is a picture of what we can spiritually experience in our day. So actually what the New Testament teaches us is this, that you and I are called to be the priests. We're called to be the priests. So Peter, when he's writing to all the saints who are scattered throughout the earth, says this in 1 Peter 2, verse 9, you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood. And John, when he's writing to all the believers at the end of his life and at the end of the Bible as well, in Revelation 1, 6, says this, Jesus has made us to be a kingdom and priests to serve his God and Father. To him be glory and power forever and ever. We are called, you and I, believers in Jesus, we're called to be the priests. And we're called to carry the presence of God while people watch and walk the miracle so that people see us walk the miracle and they're able to follow in our wake and find salvation themselves. That's the picture. Can you see it? The priests pick up the ark, the presence of God, and walk out. I don't know what was the most courageous or nerve-wracking part of that story for the priests. When they heard, pick up the ark and walk into the water. You see, I mean, in the picture there are only four of them, I think, but there are probably a few more than that. Here they all are, shouldering the ark. I wonder if one of them thought, if we're going to walk and stand on the water, it would be easier without carrying this thing. Okay, try just going out and standing in the water. Actually, they'd been told to walk into the water carrying the box, and the box was the sign of God's presence. And that's the reason that they got through the water on dry ground, because it says, when the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth goes into the water, you will see the water stand up. It wasn't the priests, it was the priests carrying the ark. And the ark was what went in front of the people as they saw it. The people saw the presence of God going into the water, and the water dried up. How are those many people out there that Hannah talked about when she said, we're not just worshipping here for ourselves, we're worshipping for the many out there. How are they going to see the presence of God? They're going to see the presence of God when we walk out of here carrying the presence of God and we walk into miracles. We walk the miracle in front of them so that they see it. That's what we're called to do. That's what, as believers in Jesus Christ, we are called for. I don't know whether, if someone had said to you tonight, do you know what your calling is? Do you have a holy calling? And you would have thought, I probably do. How would you say you had a holy calling? How would you describe that? Well, I can tell you. Your holy calling is to be a priest carrying the presence of God. Carrying the presence of Jesus, just like those priests. They were told to carry the presence of God and walk into a miracle, because you don't, folks, go and walk on water just like that. Nobody can stand in water and it dries up. You can only do that in response, in obedience to God, and when you're carrying his presence. So it's really, really important that we see ourselves in this picture, carrying the presence of God. Is that how you see yourself walking out, for example, of this building tonight? Is that how you see yourself tomorrow? Well, not tomorrow probably because it's bank holiday, but Tuesday when you go back to work. Maybe you go into college, into your office or into your classroom or wherever you go on Tuesday. See yourself right now carrying the presence of God. And what will God say to you? Because God will speak to you and he'll say, as you carry the presence, carry my presence into this place where you're going, I want you to do this. And it will be a miracle thing because he wants people to see it. And you see, there's a whole nation waiting to see the people of God moving out in miracles, carrying the presence of God. And as they see that, they will be able to walk through into their salvation. Can you see the picture? Hello. You're very obedient on the front row, but I'm really talking to the back row. No, as well as you. Called to carry the presence of God. That's what we are. We're called to carry his presence. Now, I need to say, that's really all I want to say, but I need to say three things about it. So if you'll bear with me, I'm just going to give you three other pointers or three things that we ought to talk about tonight. The first thing is this. It's a warning. Because there's also a warning in the Old Testament narrative about carrying the presence of God. And the warning comes like this. You can drop the box. And the people of Israel did drop the box, as it were. They fell into, you see, they got into the promised land. You see, you can get all the things you just talked about in 2011. Everything could happen, and the same thing could happen for you as happened to the people of Israel. They got complacent. Oh, we're there. You know, everything I worked for and dreamed for, I've got it. What will you do now? Well, you could get complacent, because there'll be another Jordan ahead of you. There'll be another thing that God wants you to do. But you could get complacent. And you know, when they got complacent, they slipped into disobedience. Just didn't listen to God. And when they slipped into disobedience, they slipped into immorality. You know, it was a downward cycle. They stopped worshiping in the promised land. And what happened was this. The enemies, that great long list of people that God said he would overcome for them, the enemies overcame them and stole their box, stole the presents. And the people of Israel sank into depression. You know, depression and weariness and listlessness can often just be a sign that we have somewhere along the line, it's not always, but it can be a sign that we have just lost the presence of God. Let me tell you, the presence of God doesn't have to stay lost for long. You can find it again. And the people of Israel did find the box again. But it was 20 long years before they eventually, under King David, decided they would get the box back, get the ark back, and reinstall it as the center of their worship. And David, who was a good king and wanted to do the right thing and was God's man and a good man, said, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to do it. And where can I find it? 2 Samuel 6, verse 3. Let me read you this little bit. They set the ark of God on a new cart and brought it from the house of Abinadab, where it had been stored, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the ark of God on it, and Ahio was walking in front of it. And the rest of the story, some of you will know this, is that they slipped, and in order to hold the ark on the cart, they both died. They got killed. God killed them. It's a story that strikes terror into one's heart, because you think, here were people trying to do their best. Here were people who had good motives. They wanted to bring the presence of God back into the center of their lives, their nation's life. And they got killed. David was absolutely distraught. You would be. Why had it happened? I mean, why would God do that? And the reason, of course, was that they had forgotten what the ark was for. The ark was the box, and it had four rings on the corners, and it had two poles through the rings, and the ark was made and designed by God to be carried on shoulders. It wasn't designed to be put on a cart, even though it was a new cart. I mean, David was doing the best he could, but it wasn't what God had designed. And you know, I think I notice the same thing amongst us, that we can sometimes, when we want to come back to God, that's a good thing, have the right motives for doing that, and be good people. But if we don't do things according to God's way, you know, we can be in a dangerous place. How will we ever know what's the right thing to do? I mean, who will tell us what's the right thing? I mean, how will we know if we're doing it right? It's the only way. We've got to know we're doing it right. And you know, the way that is still God's way is that we carry the presence of God on our shoulders. How might we fall into the same mistake that David made by putting it on a new cart? See, sometimes I think that we have thought the presence of God belongs in the church, a new church, a nice church, with a good band, a musical band. They play in tune. They've practiced, you know, they do it. And I just turn up and I watch. Well, I sing along if I know it. and if I like it. Now, I'm not saying that you do that, but it can be done. And that's exactly the same thing as putting the Ark of God on a new cart. We leave it to someone else. We leave it to someone who's professional or does it right. Or, you know, they do it over there and I just stand over here. And friends, that's not what worship of God is all about. The worship of God is about this. We turn up, we turn our faces to the Lord. We sing those songs. We know that his face comes right down to ours. His face shines on us and we know his presence. And as we know and experience his presence in worship, we find that we're carrying his presence again. And you know, we haven't worshipped enough until we've got to that place. That's the place we want to get to. So let's take this warning that the Israelites suffered under and not do it ourselves. Let's find that place where we know we've got to the place of experiencing God's presence in worship and we receive him. We receive him with such humble and grateful hearts. Because whoever you are called to be a priest. You don't have to be from a particular tribe or clan or race. You don't have to be a particular age, and you don't have to be a particular educational background. You can be anyone who wants to show up and turn your faces to the Lord and say, I'm for you, Lord. Thank you for saving me. And the Lord says, I'm for you. Thank you for coming. And he gives us his presence. And his presence is made to be carried out of this place, not to be left here. Let's not leave his presence on this nice new church's cart. Let's carry it out into the places that we go week by week. That's the warning. And the other two things, which I'm not going to spend too long on because I think we want to experience this ourselves a bit, I want to talk just about the power of the presence and the practice of the presence. The power of the presence of God. You see, I think it was the... could someone please get me a glass of water? I don't know what it is up here. I'm actually warm. Is anybody else warm? No. Oh, you all ought to be up here. I think it was the presence of God that the band left or something. The power of the presence of God. If those priests in this story had said, let's try and go on the water and be obedient, thank you so much, and be obedient, but we won't do it with the box because that just is going to weigh us down a bit. We understand about gravity and we'll put the box over there and we'll try and do it ourselves. It would probably not have worked and they would have walked into the water and looked silly. They took the box, the presence of God, on their shoulders, and they carried the presence of God into the water, and they walked the miracle. And that's what enabled the people to walk across behind them and find salvation. The power of the presence of God. When you and I carry the presence of God, God works. That's why people go up on the high road on Saturday to pray for people, because they're carrying the presence of God up onto the high road. And they see people healed when they pray. And other people see that and think, wow, God's at work. God's here. God's presence is amongst us here in Finchley. That's an incredible thing. Maybe I need to find out more about this. But you know, the power of the presence is not just as people see miracles in that what I would call a narrow sense. I hope that each one of us is willing to hear the voice of God saying, carry my presence into your workplace, into your family and your group of friends, and pray for them wherever you see them. And I hope you see miracles like that. But I think sometimes we underestimate the miracle life that we're called to live when we're in the midst of difficulties. Let me just illustrate it. Long ago, in the last century, in the last millennium, there was a young woman in this church. And sadly and grievously, her husband deserted her and left her penniless with two young children to bring up and not much in material wealth to her name. So she had to go back to work. And she had to go back to work in order to find accommodation and be able to look after her children. But she lived a very uncertain life, and she had to work really hard. So her work colleagues, and she went back to work as a teacher, her colleagues in her staff room got to know her and knew her story. And her story was not one of traditional victory. You know, my husband has come back, he's become a Christian, and all's hunky-dory, I've got this lovely family, two children, beautiful house, and here I am teaching. Now, would anybody like to become a Christian? It wasn't like that. She went in day after day, and they would say, how are you doing? And she would share something of her story, how her husband might well have been trying to take custody of her children, and she might even lose her children. That was very grievous, how she might cry herself to sleep at night. But at the same time, she would say, but you know, my God is looking after me. I have no one else, but my God is looking after me, and I still trust him. And at the end of the tears, I'm still praying. My tears are my prayers. And they just listened, and they were with her, and they were part of her story as they shared it with her. In time, several of those work colleagues went through difficulties themselves. And as they faced their own difficulties, one's husband left her, or had an affair and left her then. One lost a baby in miscarriage, and one became very lonely because she went into a new place. But as they found, as they experienced those difficulties and wondered what on earth they were going to do, you know what they thought? I've seen someone carrying the box into the water, walking the miracle, and I can walk after her and I'll go and ask her how she did it. That's not what they said. They came to her and said, how did you do that? Help me. I'm in a similar situation. How did you do that? And is there any help for me? And she said, of course there is. And you know, all three of them became Christians. That is walking the miracle in another way. Do you know, and some of us are called to walk the miracle like that. Why do Christians suffer? Because you've got to walk the miracle in it. And you walk the miracle not on your own, not sort of holding your own bootstraps up. Well, I've lost them. You know, pulling your own. I'm lost there. You don't do it on your own. You don't do it just by working hard and making an effort. You do it by carrying the presence of Jesus. You meet him in worship and you carry his presence. And then you just share yourself. I mean, there's nothing special about any of us. But when we're carrying the presence of Jesus, there is. We walk the miracle. And people will watch. And maybe they'll see something glorious like a healing. Maybe they'll see something victorious like a life in difficulty lived out. Trusting. But they want to see something, just like all those people of Israel watching to see whether the priest would make it over the Jordan. They want to see something, and when they do, they're right there behind you. That's how we're going to make a difference, friends. It's not just sitting here for a few hours every Sunday and just singing and just listening and doing our bit and going home. We've got to gather. We've got to know God's presence. We've got to know that his presence is for us and that we can carry his presence out there. The power of the presence. We are the people of the presence, and we've got to know that there is power in the presence. And here's the last thing, the practice of the presence. Some of you will know about Moses practicing the presence of God in the desert. Moses had a tent. I might have got a picture of it somewhere. Moses had a tent in the presence. Some of you come with us to New Wine in the summer. It's a very good thing to be in a tent every now and again. I say between gritted teeth, because I'm in a caravan. Yeah. Moses had a tent, And it says that he went off to the tent with his young mentee, Joshua, and he would just seek God's face. And when he came out, his face was radiant. Moses' face was shining because he'd been in the presence of God. He was carrying the presence of God on his face. In fact, it frightened the Israelites, and he had to put a veil on it because that scared them off. But it says in the New Testament, we don't need to wear the veil. If you have a shining face, go for it. You won't frighten people. Too many, anyway. That's what Moses did. He found the presence of God in a tent. Where's your tent? That's my first question. Everyone needs a tent somewhere. Now, you may not have a tent. You may have your bedroom. You may have, I don't know, a place you get to on your own. If you're in a very busy household like mine, there was a time in my life when there were so many people living and moving around me, and most of them were under this size, that I used to just take a book and put it over my face. And, you know, I used to find the Lord under the book. I know some people who have a little mat, and they take the mat and they put that down, and then they know that they can just seek God's face there. What are you going to do when you find the Lord's face? Well, you're going to worship him, talk to him, be real, maybe play your worship music, sing to him. Just let your heart find the Lord's heart. And how will you know when you've done it? How long will it take? I don't know. How long is a piece of string? But you know you've got to find the Lord's presence, and you've got to find some witness in you. And when you've found that, you found it. Go. Carry his presence out into your daily life. When your face radiates. When you know you've found his presence. But you see, Moses didn't just stop at the tent in the wilderness, because he knew that it wasn't enough for just him and for Joshua. The whole people had to have a tent, which is why he, under God, built another tent that was big enough for all the people to worship in. And you get another picture of that. Here's the big tent. No, it's not. It will come. There's a big tent because we need to gather together regularly to worship God and to find his presence. That's what we're doing on a Sunday. That's what we're doing on a Sunday. We're meeting to find the presence of God as we worship. We need to put our hearts and our voices into that worship. And we need to be able to know that God is hearing your heart. He's not listening for whether you're singing in tune. He's not listening for whether you've remembered the words and the melody. He's just listening for your heart. I don't care if you don't sing in tune. The Lord loves it. Maybe you haven't been given the gift of tunefulness. Doesn't matter. You give your heart and your song to the Lord. I love the person I know who doesn't sing in tune, because her heart is so for the Lord, and I want to be like that. We just give ourselves to the Lord. And as soon as we do that, he gives himself back to us. It's just a response. We practice his presence together, and there's something about the dynamic of when we meet him all together. I'm sure Peter will find that second. If you click on that, there is one there. Okay, he can't find it. But there is a very important dynamic to when we meet together and practice the presence of God together. We've got to do that on our own and together. We need to practice it because we need to know the power of it, and we need to walk carrying it. We need to know that we're called to carry his presence out into our lives. Are you up for that? Yes. I know you are. I know you are, because so many of you are doing it all the time. That means it's going to make a difference to the way we react. Do you know, I asked Pauline if I could just tell the story, and I'm going to finish with this, and then we're going to pray for each other. But Pauline brought a couple of friends to the Women's Day, and they really enjoyed it, and they responded at the end, you might have heard her say, to some words of knowledge, and they came up for prayer. And one of them had a pain in her shoulder. I think she had a frozen shoulder, didn't she? And we both talked to her and said, has the Lord healed your shoulder? And she said, well, halfway, but not the whole way. So we put our hands on her shoulder and said, Jesus wants to heal you. Now, if you carry the presence of God, as soon as you touch someone like that, and you say to them, Jesus wants to heal you, Jesus can do this. That's all you need to do. We needed to explain to her, didn't we, who Jesus is, and that he loves her, and that he wants her to know that she too can be touched by his love and by his healing. And by the time we'd explained that to her and said, how is your shoulder, and taken our hands off, she just said, it's completely better. Because you see, Jesus does that. If you know that you're carrying the presence of God, you don't need to go into great long religious rigmarole with people. You just explain to them that Jesus loves them and he's there for them. When someone comes up to you and says, how is it you are always okay even when things go wrong? You know, you don't seem to go right under like I do. You don't seem to go into the depths of depression like other people do. What are you going to say? Because you see, the reason you don't is that you're carrying the presence of Jesus and he's helping you. And he's helping you walk that miracle. Think about what you're going to say when someone says to you the next time, what's the secret of your life? You'll all have your own way of doing it. Whether it's, you know, that sort of tag thing, well, there is a secret, and one day when we've got some time, I'm going to share it with you, and then you walk on. So you really rouse their curiosity. Or whether you can think of something that's really just quick to say to them, you know, there is something. And it's got something to do with me being a Christian. And it's not just for me, it's for you too. Find out how to say something to them. Because you see, what people are seeing in you is probably the presence of Jesus that you're carrying. It's not just that you're just a good sort. They're seeing you carry the presence of Jesus, and they want to know what it is because they want to follow you. I've done enough. Why don't we stand? You feel you've got a picture that you can go into this new year with of yourself carrying the presence of the Lord. I want you to have that picture in your mind so that you go into this week carrying the presence of God, so that it's not just any old bod. It's not just little old you and you're not going to make a difference. You are going to make a mighty difference, friends, if you carry the presence of God. Don't put the box down. You won't do it if you leave the box here. You've got to carry the presence. So just where you stand, just in the silence of your heart, I want you to just say to the Lord, I want to carry your presence. I realize I'm called to be a priest, to carry your presence. I didn't think I was very important, but now I realize that you've given me a sacred task, a holy task, and I'm going to carry your presence. I'm not going to put the box down and leave it here. I want to carry your presence out into this week. You just say that to the Lord for yourself. If you've said that to the Lord, I want you to just raise your hands to the Lord and we're just going to bless each other in that task and that calling. Because we've just got to now be sensitive to what God is calling us to do. You know, God will ask you to do something particular, you. And it won't be the same as the person next to you or anyone else. You've got a specific task from the Lord. And as you carry his presence, you can do that, but you've got to hear what it is, and you've got to be willing to be obedient to walk the miracle. And maybe it's just a really difficult time ahead. Are you willing to walk in obedience? Maybe it's walking courageously to pray for someone. Are you willing to be courageous and obedient? Lord, I pray that you would come on every heart that has committed itself to you. I pray that you would come and bless every person here who has said they want to walk carrying your presence into this week. And I pray right now, Lord, that you would come and speak to their hearts and show them just what you wanted them to do. Lord, it may be that even now you want to give them instructions, like you gave those priests of old instructions. Just wait on the Lord. If your hands get heavy, you don't have to have them right up. But it doesn't mean that you have lost the presence. But just keep yourself in that state of listening to the Lord.